From the central coast of California, across the nation and around the world, bringing you conscious living through positive thinking. It's time to turn the lead in your life into gold. It's Good Vibrations Radio with Solazar and Kirilani on Radio Monterey.
I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. On the wind that lifts her perfume through the air,
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Hello, I'm Solazar, and this is Good Vibrations Radio, tools for transformation right here on Radio Monterey. Now, Kirilani, the other half of the dynamic duo, will not be joining us this evening, but we're going to hear from her periodically throughout the night as we do some commercial returns and also some of the information I will share as well. And it's always wonderful when she's here, and it's always powerful to feel her energy when she's unable to be here physically. So quantum physics tells us that we're all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We're your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is the owner-operator of Radio Monterey Empowerment Programming, Radio for the Open Mind. Take a look at RadioMonterey.com. Look at our lineup and our schedule and see some of the talent that we're bringing to you to help you make your life a better place. And Magic for Life also is the producer and promoter of the Rhoda Psychic Fair, which is coming to the Monterey Fairgrounds May 2nd and 3rd. If you were here there November 1st and 2nd for our fall fair, we hope you enjoyed it, and we look forward to seeing you again. And if you weren't able to make it, we missed you and really look forward to seeing you again May 2nd and 3rd. So stay tuned for more information about that. Now, some very wonderful things happened today. And the biggest thing, of course, is that Mercury went direct. After that Mercury retrograde that was just dragging and pulling and pulsing and causing all types of havoc, Mercury went retrograde in Aquarius. It stayed in Aquarius, and it's going direct in Aquarius. And that tends to be the forerunner of some previous positions when Mercury did that. It did it in 2008, and we know what happened there with the financial crisis when Mercury stayed in the same sign that it went to retrograde in. And also in 2001, and we know that's when people lost course and flew airplanes into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center. Now, I'm not predicting, promoting, or forecasting that something dire is going to happen, but the real point is, even though we've gone direct and we're going to feel some of that pressure lifting off us, we're going to stay in a little bit of a fog in our communication for a period of time going forward. We're still going to feel a little bit of that aspect tension that's going on in the world. So don't be ready to say we're all done with all of that. Now, I wanted to actually point out a couple of things. I've been facing this week, I've been having some issues of my own, emotional issues, as I go through my own little roller coaster of emotional healing. And once again, we know that Chiron had gone retrograde back in June and then came out of retrograde in November. And Chiron is the wounded healer, bringing up all those childhood wounds and healings that we need to heal. Now, if we didn't do any healing during that process in your emotional issues, it's certainly going to be hitting you in the face over the next several months. And I think that there are several issues I didn't really appropriately deal with. Intellectually, yes. Emotionally, nah, not so much. So I wanted to share this with you from my Essene Book of Days. And it said, as the force of new life wells up in me, I hear the far call of my ancient spiritual father, the sun. This is a time for reaching upward, a time for growing toward the sky. As I still draw nourishment from my mother, the earth, I am the link. I am the channel between the sun and the earth. I am life. So look at yourself each and every day, no matter what you're confronting or facing, as the bridge between your heaven and earth. You are the one drawing it all together. You are the one making it all possible. You are the one making the choices in your life. And as we said in the forecast call that Kirilani and I did for the month of February, I am the architect of my life. I build its foundation. I choose its contents. My life is just beginning. Each and every day, we start anew. So stop carrying that baggage forward with you each and every day and start each day anew. Speaking of anew, that brings us to the start of something new here on Radio Monterey this week. We have Sherry Dr. Felton, who will be bringing her Wellness Wednesday to us. Now, we introduced her last week, and she has a broad and varied background in the medical and health fields, besides being a registered nurse and a public health nurse, as well as a faith nurse. She's a biologist, a financial analyst, and a California credentialed teacher. She's worked in so many different areas of education, nutrition, consultation, hydration, so many things, anything you want to do. And she's going to be with us every Wednesday from 5:15 to 5:30 to share her wisdom with us so that we can choose wellness over not being well in our life. And once we start taking charge of our own wellness, we actually start taking charge of so much more in our life, because it will affect our emotions, and how we feel in general, as well as how we interact with others. So that being said, let's go ahead and welcome back to Good Vibrations Radio, Sherry Dr. Felton and her Wellness Wednesday.
Thank you so much, Solazar. Very much appreciate that intro. This is Sherry Dr. Felton with Wellness Wednesday on Good Vibration Radio. Each week I bring to you, from the Wellness Planning Institute in Monterey, helpful scientific information and awareness to improve your health, your wellness, relationships, and everyday lifestyle. Now, we know that for the month of February, our minds typically go towards thoughts of Valentine's and love and relationships. And we know that the key component towards other things in terms of trust, spending time together, the key component in relationships for making them work is the big C, communication. And I thought, for this time frame, since many of us are thinking about relationships, whether we're in one, just ending one, or hoping to be in one, it's very helpful to be prepared that in our day-to-day interactions, as we interact with people, people we know, strangers, people we'd like to get to know, it'd be a good idea to be able to have good communication skills. Now, what I'd like to refer to is something that has been called a list of no-nos, but I usually think in terms of positive aspects. So I'm going to say that these are a list of 10 yes-yeses. And even though it was geared for young people in middle school, I think that they're very apropos for anybody who wants to be in a very open, thriving, very life-giving relationship. By the way, with these 10 points, these were actually applied to a couple, a married couple here in Monterey, and I'll just call them David and Mary. And when David and Mary came to me, they had gotten to a place in their relationship after 20 years of marriage of not being able to hear what the other is saying, was saying, and speaking their words shrouded in certain attitudes that came across in their words or in the way that they would communicate. And it was causing them to have a higher wall in their communication. So with these 10 points, and applying a different one each week with a focus, mindfully thinking of these things as they would go about their days. It helped them to come to a place where before they had come to me, they were thinking about separating, and afterwards they have a very thriving, very vibrant relationship. And as a side note, not only did it help them in their own marriage relationship, they found it was very powerful indeed in their work situations and in the school environment as well. So with that, I'll just go ahead and mention them. They're not necessarily in order. I will give credit to the person who had written this. It's two authors by the name of Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna. And the name of their book is Middle School, The Inside Story. But as I shared before, I think these are key points for anyone who is interested in effective communication and building a more thriving relationship. So some of the things to think about, and by the way, I understand many of you are already practicing these aspects in your lives, and so I would ask that you help to continue modeling them for those who are still struggling with how to be able to really be heard and to hear others in their communication. One of the things that is considered a yes to practice is to not interrupt, not cutting people off before the end of their story. Allow them the opportunity to speak their side of things in the amount of time it might take them. And it may take quite some time, maybe the first time for someone to even feel like they're even being listened to. So not interrupting. Another one is not downplaying someone's feelings. You know, sometimes people will say something like, oh, you think that's a big deal? You should try living my life. Well, what have we done by saying those phrases? We've actually diminished someone's own feelings. Feelings are feelings. There's not a right or a wrong. They're just feelings, and feelings pass. We can change them. So the second point is not downplaying feelings. Another aspect that's very important is not belittling someone in front of others. We may think it's really funny to tell friends or family members or even in a group, a social gathering, about someone's faults or their mistakes when that person is standing right there. And we think, oh, how funny, and expect them to laugh along with. But what we've done is help them to feel less than vibrant, less than their right self. So not a good thing. We would not want to belittle people in front of others, or belittle them at all, frankly. Another aspect is being sarcastic. And sometimes, especially if we are adults and we're busy and we've had a busy day and we have a little bit of time to be able to deal with young people, and their aspects of what's really earth-shattering is, in our estimation, of little consequence. But by being sarcastic, such as, sure, go ahead, I've got plenty of money, you can go ahead and buy the world, when they're asking for something that has a little cost, for example, it really makes it that they feel less than valued. And it's more important about that tone of voice. We might even say those same words in not such a sarcastic way, but it's that tone that comes across that will help someone feel belittled. There's some other aspects that are really important, such as not yelling. And that doesn't necessarily mean in a loud voice. Now, in some families, yelling is considered a normal part of communication. Some other families are not so used to that raised tone of voice. But I find that with some individuals, especially if they're feeling just a little bit on edge, that you can be speaking in a very normal conversational tone, yet in their ears it sounds like yelling. So more important about the tone and the attitude when we're speaking our words with someone, that that sense of yelling doesn't come across to the individual. That mighty phrase of "you always" or "you never." And what happens when someone hears those words? They tend to get defensive, don't they? And they start looking for ways to justify their behavior. Now, it may be that they do have a tendency towards certain behaviors, but when we use those words, always or never, it just tends to shut down communication. The other aspects that are really important, I'm just going to go over them very briefly. Criticizing, that's part of what we had talked about of belittling someone. And it could be that we truly are disappointed or not as happy about how something is coming across. But when we express disappointments in someone's behavior or their attitude or their grades, their clothes, their style, their friends, and the list goes on and on, if we do it in a way that puts someone down, it doesn't allow for that sense of closeness, trust, and feeling alive in the relationship. Using half an ear. And we have technology to blame for that. While technology can be a wonderful adjunct, what is it that we're normally doing oftentimes, especially if we're in business, if we're in the midst of our busy days, we are listening with half an ear while we're looking at some screen, whether it's computer, iPad, or our telephones. Now, how do we feel if someone is doing that with us? Something to think about when someone is asking for our attention. You know, the biggest gift that could be given is when you pause in what you're doing and you make that full-on eye contact with a readiness to really hear what is being said. Reading in between the lines is just powerful. Along with that of not criticizing, not being judgmental. What were you thinking? Why are you so... When you hear that said to you, how do you feel? Immediately puts you on the defensive, doesn't it? So oftentimes, too, before we get the whole story, we might want to assume it's someone's fault before we even know all the facts. And sometimes we'll even go so far as, even when it is shown that the teller of the event or situation is not at fault, we're still holding them at fault. And that's not real good for bringing a vibrant, trusting relationship. And then lastly, there is a tendency sometimes to want to solve someone's problems, especially as we're very effective in our workaday world when we're dealing with younger people or those who may not have as much experience as we do. What is the tendency if we want to fix their problem before we've even allowed them the chance to really work it through? Sometimes speaking something out loud with you acting as the soundboard is a very helpful way for helping someone to figure out for themselves what it is that they need to do. And by our solving the problem for them, it helps them to feel inferior to us or to their ability to even be that problem solver. So even though I didn't read them in the order that was printed in the book, I'll just recap again some of the things that are very helpful, especially in this time of February when we're coming together in various kinds of relationships, is the interrupting, downplaying feelings, yelling, using always and never, criticizing, using half an ear, belittling in front of others, being judgmental, solving their problems, and being sarcastic. So, in closing, just wanted to let you know that in honor of Valentine's Day, I'm giving away 1 8-ounce bag of yummy, healthful, energizing chocolates. I have a maximum of 3 bags that I'm giving away. All you have to do is to contact me with your name, telephone number, and email. Send your info to WP as in Peter, ICCC. At att.net and enjoy those chocolates. So this has been Sherry Dr. Felton with my Wellness Wednesday segment on Good Vibration Radio. I plan to be back next Wednesday evening from 5:15 to 5:30. If you want to contact me, visit my website at wellnessplanninginstitute.com or call 831-531-4553. Thank you.
Well, and thank you for sharing that wonderful information with everyone. And everyone, make sure you get your email sent in so you can get it goes to. Let's hear the email again, please.
It is WPICCC at att.net.
There you go. So go ahead and get your email in. Go to the wellnessplanninginstitute.com website, and if you get confused about the email, just go there, submit your information for Sherry Dr. Felton so you can get some of your yummy chocolates that are actually healthful and good for you. And I think it's wonderful that we even talk about the whole issue of love, because everything about love starts with self-love in all of us. I have yet to meet somebody who doesn't need help with self-love. And I don't mean narcissistic, looking in the mirror, acting out. I mean self-love, where we truly have a truly affirmed love of self. We're all working on that, all of us. And some are in a much better place than others. Now, I haven't met the Dalai Lama personally, but I suspect he doesn't have a problem with self-love. He understands the concept. But for the rest of us, start with loving yourself and caring for yourself. And the Wellness Planning Institute has a full array of experts in various areas and modalities, and you may want to seek them out. You could also go to the guest page of goodvibrationsradio.com to connect right over to the Wellness Planning Institute. It's right down there. So we're going to take a commercial break, and we will be back after that with more Good Vibrations Radio. Thank you for listening.
You can enjoy an evening of inspiration, personal growth, intellectual stimulation, and powerful energy for transformation at the Circle of Light. Connect with other adventurous souls seeking the expanded view outside the box. Join us at the Circle of Light on the third Friday of each month at the Unitarian Sanctuary, 490 Aguajito Road, Carmel, just off the PG Pebble Beach exit of Highway 1. Doors open at 7 p.m. General admission is $11, $9 for students and seniors. Call 484-1923 for more information.
Welcome back. You're listening to Good Vibrations Radio.
On Radio Monterey. And we're so glad you're back with us. We just had the powerful and wonderful information from Sherry Dr. Felton from the Wellness Planning Institute. She shared her list of things we can do to actually improve our communication with anyone, but certainly, as she said, in this month of love, with Valentine's Day coming up, we can focus on this to that very special someone to really make our communication much more impactful and powerful. You know, as we, Sherry Dr. Felton and I were talking during the break also, is that the important part about love that most of us miss is really that true sense of self-love. Now, self-love doesn't come from our intellectual or mental way of saying, I need this quart of ice cream because I love myself, or I need to smoke this cigar from Havana because I love myself. Self-love really comes from embracing and honoring those things that really serve us. As we'll also talk in the second hour with Howard Strauss, it's also about making choices for our health and wellness, because that's the base of everything else we do. It's going to affect every relationship we're a part of. It's going to affect how we sleep. It's going to affect how we feel. And the way we feel and the rest we have is going to just generate a complete energetic response to everything we encounter in our life. Yesterday, we spoke, of course, to Helen Wu and the idea of self-aid and how you go about really creating self-aid in your life. And you might recall, for those of you who were able to hear that show, and we'll get the podcast out there soon, but self-aid is really an acronym. And it's not just self-aid. And certainly the S of self-aid is about self. There's no question about that. That's exactly what it is, self-aid. And the E of self-aid is about esteem, having self-esteem and confidence so that you can build the strength for yourself, so you can have the courage and the ability to move forward. The L of the self-aid is love. Love is so vital to everything that we do, but it starts with that love of self and moves to the love of others. And if we are comfortable and in love with ourselves, we don't have problems with others. Remember, think of how many times we say things like, oh, if you hadn't done that to me, or if you hadn't said that, I wouldn't have done this. Well, all of those are non-loving statements, because we're putting the responsibility for the choice we made and how we chose to react on the other person. And if we do find ourselves triggered, it's because we haven't replaced that hurt, that inner hurt. When I spoke of Chiron in the beginning of the show, that the wounded healer, we haven't replaced that hurt inside of ourselves with love, so it has no stability, it has no security. In her self-aid, the L stands for laughter. Plenty of laughter in your life. Laughter is the great aphrodisiac. It's the great healer. It releases endorphins into our system, which allows them to work on any area where there's a boo-boo. They're going to go to it. The F of self is for freedom. Letting go of the anger, pain, and resentment gives us freedom. As long as we're holding on to that anger, pain, and resentment, we're being weighed down by the baggage. You know, there's the story of the two Buddhist monks coming up to a lake. And standing at the edge of the lake was this beautiful woman in these very expensive silk gowns. And she turned to the monks and said, She turned to the monks and said, I have to cross that lake, you know, but I can't get my gowns wet. And the older monk said, the older monk said, let me carry you on my shoulders. So as they crossed the lake, he carried the woman across. When they got to the other side, he put the woman down, and the two monks went on their way. And several miles later, 4 or 5 miles later, the younger monk turned to the older monk, and he said, how could you have done that? He said, you know our vows forbid us to touch a woman, and yet you carry that woman across the lake. And the older monk turned to the younger monk and said, yes, but I put her down at the edge of the lake. Why are you still carrying her? And what is our point? Our point is when we carry that anger, that resentment, that lack of forgiveness for other people, we're actually carrying their baggage. Why should we carry their baggage in our lives? That doesn't make any sense for any of us. So it's important that we let go of that. Now, when she gets to the aid in self-aid, and for those listening, I'm talking about Helen Wu's book, Self-Aid, which gets released this Friday. And if you go to the Good Vibrations radio.com website to the guest page, you can connect over to selfaidwithhelenwu.com and make sure you get yourself a copy of this book. But the aid of self-aid stands for attitude. Now, we often talk about a positive attitude, but we act like it's a force thing. Well, if you just think something's good, it is, and it makes all the difference. But what's the real positive thing about attitude? The real positive thing about attitude is that attitude of gratitude. It's truly finding what you can be grateful for on any given day. Now, many years ago, Kirilani and I spoke with Bronwyn Marmo, who went from being massively overweight, massively obese, to being slim and svelte. And what she realized is that not only was she overweight, but she was overweight because she truly did not love, honor, or respect herself. So what did Bronwyn do? She decided she would find out what she liked about herself. And she looked in the mirror and looked in the mirror and looked in the mirror, and she couldn't find anything except her eyes. So she decided that each day she would be grateful for her eyes. And it started shifting her by finding what she was grateful for. Here's my point about this whole thing. You don't have to be grateful about everything in your life, but damn it, be grateful about something. There is something in your life for which you can be grateful, even if it's just for you, for your desire, for your drive, for your heart, for your love of others, for your caring, for your compassion, for your willingness to want to make it better. You can find something in your life. It could be your dog. It could be your cat. It could be that piece of music that you've managed to hear that you like that has meaning for you. It could be something you read. I'm grateful that I found that information that I was able to read so I can be working on that type of information. It doesn't matter what it is, as long as you find that thing to be grateful. And as you're finding that information to be grateful, what you get to do is focus on that. And that's her part of attitude. It's not that you wake up each day with a grateful, with an attitude, and yet underneath you don't feel it. It's that you practice the art of gratitude for those areas in your life where you can feel great. gratefulness and keep working on that. That will shift your attitude very, very fast. Integrity. Now, people use integrity in a lot of different ways. I look at integrity as a foundational quality of each and every one of us. And here's what I mean by integrity. Integrity is being true to who you are. It's being your real self, but never, never, never at the expense of another. You know, several years ago, we had a guest on the show that apparently she had sent me her, you know, her marketing materials like 8 months in advance. When I went to access them to prepare for the show, that download link no longer worked. So I got information from her website and put some information to send out in our email. Well, she was very upset with what I put out in the email. Apparently, I'd put something incorrect. So I was quite willing to correct it on air that evening. But when I brought her into the call that evening to bring her on the show, this is before we're live on air, she told me she had to tell me what I had done wrong, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and went through this whole different dialogue of all these whole things. And she said, and that was very important for me, she's talking about herself, for me to get my truth out before we started this interview. And I put her into the queue, and I turned to Kira, and I said, "You're talking to her. I'm not. I have nothing to say to her tonight." And I didn't participate in the interview at all. You know, and my point about that is that was not her truth. That was her ego. Her ego had the need prior to the interview to create a negative situation, which was the berating, because she chose to see what I did as something directed at her, which she never asked. You know, she was flailing and frantic and frenetic. Happy to correct it all. Happy to do that. I can tell you that I am the king of the typos, so I don't have any shame about that. But the real point is that that wasn't being true to herself. That was being true to her ego, her need to express her righteousness. So when we're doing integrity, it's never to impact another person. Integrity is making a choice for you that is in line with your core principles. For example, if you always go to sleep or go to bed at 9 at night and you don't take phone calls after 9 at night, then when somebody says, "I'll call you at 9:30, you say, "Would you call me before 9 because I always go to bed at 9 and don't take calls?" That's all. But if somebody calls you at 9:30, you don't suddenly go in there and say, "What did you call me at 9:30 for? I don't take calls after 9. That's not integrity. That's judgment. That's righteousness. So you make choices for you that go right to the heart of it. And when you express them as they impact you. Integrity must be aligned with humility. And here's how I see humility. Humility is what allows you to accept yourself where you are. You can only learn at the pace you can learn. You can only do at the rate that you can do. Humility allows you to learn and do at your own pace and rate without the comparison to others. So if you were a track runner, you know, and you were comparing yourself to another runner for the sake of trying to improve your time, that's different than saying, "I'm really a terrible track runner because I could never run this speed." I heard once during the Winter Olympics about 10, 20 years ago, an announcer on TV actually say, "Well, so-and-so, who was number one in the world, I think at downhill or something like that, is this fast in this particular event. And so-and-so, who was number two in the world at the time, can only do this." And I thought the "only" was so judgmental. He was number two in the world. Number two. If number one happened to be that much faster because he was, that's fine. But let's not eliminate the fact that this other person was number two in the world, which meant he could beat everybody else but one person. That was it. That's a phenomenal accomplishment. You know, he's faster than everybody else but one guy. And we seem to minimize it. So when we're doing comparisons, we have to do comparisons in the context of what their meaning is. So when we're a performer as I am or a speaker as I am, I'm not comparing myself to other speakers and performers for what they do. I may look at them stylistically, I may look at how they've approached different things, but I'm learning from their choices. I'm not comparing myself against them, because that is only damaging. And if we compare ourselves to others, we could either only become vain or bitter, because either we're better than them, as we determine, or we're lesser than them, as we determine. So there is no reason with integrity for us to ever compare ourselves to others. We only compare ourselves to ourselves. We only compare being better than our last time at this. That's what we're comparing. And we need to, in our self-aid discussion of Helen Wu's self-aid acronym, we need to always have a dream. We need to have a dream. We always need to have something we're moving toward. Now, people use the term goals, and one of my mentors, Jeff McBride, master magician, always said that, you know, a goal is a dream with a deadline. Kira doesn't like deadlines because it has the word dead in it, so you could say due date. I don't really care. Goals have a misstated application in our society because of the industrialized society that we have and the corporatized society that we have. There's always this idea of a goal. You know, we're going to be faster, better, smarter. Instead of, a goal is something that we're personally working on for ourselves. A goal has various steps and milestones that we're trying to achieve. How do we know if we met it? How if we don't know if we don't met it? For instance, I did some things last year where I was looking at the wrong goal, and at the end, and now when I've looked back at what I did, it's like, oh my God, how stupid was that? It was a very stupid act from a very smart person. And it's because I was looking at the wrong goal, and I was thinking of the wrong goal, and I was focused on the wrong goal. But I didn't take measurements along the way to assess that. You know, and that is really critically important. So when we want to have a dream, it's nice for us to create a crystal clear intention and to be very clear about that intention. But we also have to know, how do we measure it? Now, measuring doesn't have to be complex or difficult. But it has to give us the ability to say, where are we? What do we need to learn? What do we need to do? There are specific ways that we can do that process. As a matter of fact, this year I'm going to be teaching two classes that will be available here at Radio Monterey. People will be able to come to them. One is going to be about creating that plan, that dream plan for moving forward. And the other one is how to use self-hypnosis to help you create and achieve your goals, your dreams, and meet your deadlines and due dates. So both of those are going to be very, very important. So hopefully, if you're interested, that you're at least on our email list. You can go to goodvibrationsradio.com. Sign up on the contact page or sign up on the previous monthly calls page, and I'll add you to the list. So when I do those classes, you'll be notified. But I want you to look at your life this year in a very broad way. First place, if you feel that you have been going through the process, as many people have, of challenges, restrictions, you feel almost as if you were held back from doing what you were seeking to do, then I want you to remember this mantra. There is a positive solution inside me for every one of my problems and issues. There is a positive solution inside me for every one of my problems and issues. There is a positive solution inside me for every one of my problems and issues. I am totally independent of the good and bad opinions of others. I am totally independent of the good and bad opinions of others. I am totally independent of the good and bad opinions of others. I am beneath no one. I am beneath no one. I am beneath no one. I am fearless in the face of any and all challenges. I am fearless in the face of any and all challenges. I am fearless in the face of any and all challenges. Those are your affirmations. I'm going to put all of them up on the Good Vibrations Radio Facebook page. So you can go to goodvibrationsradio.com/US on Facebook. And I will put all of these affirmations up there, and you can get them and practice them. But they are your practice for this year, to work with those and remind yourselves when you're confronted with something, what you're now doing is actually pulling out those and saying them to yourselves out loud. You say them out loud because you want to hear your voice. Another thing you can do is record them. And starting tomorrow, if you haven't done it today, actually, you can start right now. I want you to remember this.
Bully in the playground, where am I gonna play? Found a better playground half a block away. Made a little song up, caught a little rhyme. An attitude of gratitude will do it every time. An attitude of gratitude when stuff has got you down can get you satisfied and turn your world around. An attitude of gratitude, hooray for what's okay. Say thank you with emphatitude and it's a brand new day. Now daddy's in the doghouse, mama's up a tree, but I've got abuelita looking after me. Made myself a sandwich, a little P&J. An attitude of gratitude can chase the clouds away. An attitude of gratitude, that's what it's all about. That no hope to be attitude is sure to wear you out. An attitude of gratitude, hooray for what's okay. Say thank you with emphatitude, and it's a brand new day.
An attitude of gratitude. How can you forget that? Just remember that. And if you want to know that Jimmy Buffett song, you can go ahead and get it yourself, An Attitude of Gratitude. Play it to help stimulate that gratitude feeling for you in your life. Don't be shy about suddenly saying, I am no longer going to be a victim of my need for victimhood. Because we create the victims. You know, Liliana Bethany and Nolan Matthew, who will be joining with The Great Awakening on the last, the fourth Thursday of every month, always reference that, you know, we make choices in life. One of them is we get to be, you know, a volunteer or a victim. You know, so what is it you want to be? And are you tired of being a victim? Because if you're tired of being a victim, then stop. Now, I know that that sounds easier. That's like telling somebody if you don't like what pumpkin pie does to you, stop eating pumpkin pie if it's putting the pounds on you. You know, and that's so easy to say, well, stop, just stop. Well, I know it doesn't work quite that way. But it is the thing of reframing. So, for instance, one of the ways we reframe is by saying in a healthy and positive manner. In an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, I will no longer be the victim of my life. In an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, I will be the hero of my life. In an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, I will no longer be the victim of my life. In an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, I will be the hero of my life. Now, the easy and relaxed manner and healthy and positive way comes from Mark Allen, publisher of New World Library, who shared that those are the types of affirmations he created that took him from living in a one-room studio in Oakland and barely able to make his rent at the age of 30 to being the multimillionaire publisher that he is today. All of his affirmations were created in an easy and relaxed manner in a healthy and positive way. So try that out. And the other thing is, it took you a while to get here. If it took you a while, don't expect it to be resolved by next week. Give yourself time. Have patience. And you know what patience is? It's another form of self-love with ourselves. We're so willing to say, it reminds me of the movie Moonstruck, when Cher goes in to say that the one gentleman has proposed to her and that she's going to get married. Now, her previous marriage, her husband had got hit by a bus or something. They'd been married about 3 years. He got hit by a bus and was killed. So she's in the kitchen of the house where she lives with her mother and father still, and she tells him that she's going to get married. And the father just slams the table. He said, "It doesn't work for you." She said, "What do you mean it doesn't work?" He said, "Look what happened last time." She said, "Yeah, he died." He said, "That's my point. I know people married for years. Nobody dies. You're married for 3 years. It dies. It's no good for you." Well, that's getting into that victim mentality. Now, in this case, he was imposing it on her. But we're the ones that get to choose if we're going to be the victim of our own life or if we're going to be the hero of our own story. So I encourage you to find what you are the hero of your own story about. There's no reason for any of us to be the victim in our life. We are just all confronted with challenges. And, you know, it's the old story of, you know, I had no shoes and I felt bad about it till I met a man who had no feet. There's always someone who has something worse than what we're confronting. For instance, a cousin of mine, a first cousin, had a very bad breast cancer situation about 5 years ago, and the treatment ended up creating a condition on her skin where she really looks like she's just been scored by the sun. And now her breast cancer, her lymphoma has returned, and she's under treatment, and they're not sure how long she has. And just today, the boiler in her house exploded and created a fire. Her cats are dead. Her place is destroyed. She's in a bariatric chamber right now because they want to clear out her lungs and bring her back to stasis. And so all I'm saying to any of you out there who are bemoaning what just happened to yourself, I'm not asking for you to be worse than that, and I'm not asking for you to have to say you're better than that, but I'm asking you to kind of do a comparison and say, if your situation is not even close to that, then you have so much more to be grateful for, you know, than she does in this current moment. Now, should she be grateful? She should be grateful she's alive. She was lucid. She was alive. She was able to survive, and unfortunately, her cats didn't. But at the same time, everything has a reason. Everything has a purpose. So I would just say, give yourself time to get out of what you gave yourself time to get into. You know, for instance, when I look at what I'm doing right now with my weight, it took me a long time to put the weight on that I put on. I can lose it tomorrow. Losing it tomorrow just means I'll go on one binge and get it all back. I have to take time because I took a lot of time to put it on. So, have an attitude of gratitude. Learn to love and honor and respect yourself. And this Valentine's Day, don't create all the love in your life by the love you externalize to other people. Create the love in your life by the love you give to yourself and then share with the other people. Because each and every one of us is that divine human being. And Lord knows, we all deserved to be nurtured, to be loved, you know, and we deserve to give it to ourselves. I read a wonderful quote that I cannot remember, but I remember the intent. So here's my Solazarism. And really what this was about is that stop saying you're entitled to something that you don't have and just go out and get it. Find out what you need to do to get it. Now, since this is our Wellness Wednesday, and we just spoke earlier with Sherry Dr. Felton, from the Wellness Planning Institute of Monterey County. And we're going to have Howard Strauss in the next hour. I'm going right now to Heal the World with Michael Jackson. We'll be back with more Good Vibrations Radio right after the top of the hour at about 6 after the hour, when we'll be back with Howard Strauss from the Garrison Health Institute, Media Institute, and Health Media, rather. And we'll be looking forward to talking about our natural healing alternatives. Thank you for listening. And here's some Michael Jackson, and we'll be right back.
About the generations, and to say we want to make it a better place for our children and our children's children, so that they know it's a better world for them, and think they can make it a better place.
There's a place in your heart, and I know that it is love. Be much brighter than tomorrow. And if you really try, you'll find there's no need to cry. In this place, you feel there's no hurt or sorrow. There are ways to get there. If you care enough for the living, make a little space, make a better place. Heal the world.
Hello, I'm Solazar, and as we sit at the top of the hour of the first hour, Kirilani is unable to be with us, but you are right here at Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation, right here on Radio Monterey. Now, quantum physics tells us that we're all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We're your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is also the owner-operator of Radio Monterey, empowerment programming radio for the open mind. And Magic for Life is also the promoter-producer of the Rhoda Psychic Fair, coming to the Monterey Fairgrounds May 2nd and 3rd. If you weren't there November 1st and 2nd, we missed you. And if you were there November 1st and 2nd, we look forward to seeing you May 2nd and 3rd all over again, and everyone else who wasn't able to get out during that Halloween weekend. So come on out, have a great time as we celebrate Beltane and Candlemas and everything else. I mean, Beltane and May Day and spring and everything, to just bring that rebirth of life back to all of us all over again. But now we're going to continuation of our Wellness Wednesday, as we talk to Howard Strauss. Now, Howard is a graduate of MIT. He has a successful 40-year computer career before taking up the banner of his grandfather and mother, Dr. Max Garrison and Charlotte Garrison, to champion the Garrison therapy, the natural way to have health, balance, and beauty in your life. Now, Howard is joining us, but you can hear him here every evening at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, as his Power of Natural Healing show, which he does live every Monday on the Health and Wellness Network at 11 a.m. But you can hear him here and hear his information, his guidance, his wisdom, and his powerful guests as he exposes the fraud of Food, Inc., Big Pharma, the AMA, the USDA, and anyone else who puts an A after their acronym. Howard will challenge you to believe what you believe as he challenges you to take ownership of your own health and your own life. And Howard, welcome back to Good Vibrations Radio.
Great to be here, Solar Czar, always.
Well, it's good to always have you. And you came in loaded for bear because you were just, you have just, for want of a better term, probably had it up to here.
Well,
with what's going on.
Not only have I had it up to here, but now it's getting dangerous because people like me, they're getting all ready to throw us into jail or maybe even Guantanamo. They're equating me and people who hold the same opinion as me with terrorists.
And why don't you give the listeners the context of this topic so that they can follow along with you? Because what Howard states is obviously correct, and you know, because of the provisions in law, if somebody is labeled as a terrorist, you can be arrested without due process, held without due process, shuttled away somewhere without due process. And that means the ability to confront your accusers, the ability for legal representation, or even the ability to know what in the hell you're charged with. So, Howard, what's the context of the issue that you want the listeners to know?
The problem is that the vaccine manufacturers in the United States have decided that it's time to really sell a lot of vaccine. And so they are putting on a huge, major propaganda push to market vaccines, especially the MMR vaccine, which is a particularly dangerous one. So they are blaming children who are not vaccinated for causing the measles outbreaks that have been occurring. Children who are not vaccinated. And they're saying children who are not vaccinated are endangering other children by not being vaccinated, and therefore they're not allowing these children in school. They're not allowing them in doctor's offices. I mean, they're really causing a real problem. And the question is, if the MMR vaccine really protected you, then how could, supposing your child was vaccinated and my child is not, how could my child endanger your child?
And the caveat that they're throwing on that, because I asked that same question, it's that circular logic thing. Supposedly the vaccines ridded the world of measles, and it's the non-vaccinated people that have actually created measles to have a comeback. But it's an epidemic. But again, as Howard said, how is it challenging those who are vaccinated? And what I've heard in response to that question is that, well, they can still get the measles. They just don't get it as bad. And my point to that is, well, if they don't get it as bad, what's the problem?
What's the problem? Exactly. So the other thing that they're not telling you is how many of the children who ended up in the hospital with a really bad case, or even they're claiming people have died from it, right? Even so how many of those children have been vaccinated? They're not telling you that part.
But they never tell you that part, and we know that. And the other issue, too, which some people have asked for, and I think sometimes, and you may not agree with this, Howard, so I am not putting these words in your mouth. I'm not trying to say this is your proposition. But I have heard some people say, and it might be a nice middle-of-the-road compromise, break the damn vaccine up. There's two things going on, or maybe three, if you depending on how you want to look at it. One is stop loading the vaccines with mercury and aluminum and all these toxic metals and things that have nothing to do with the vaccine. And two, don't group them together. You have a young, growing body, and you take the measles, rubella, and what's the other M?
Mumps.
Yeah, you have all of that, and you infuse that into a young, growing body all at once, and you're creating potential problems that have nothing to do with creating antibodies or immunity. And Howard's just showing me something that says the FDA
has admitted in court that the vaccines, although they have told us that the vaccines, that they've taken thimerosal out of vaccine, the organic mercury, that's 100 times as toxic as mineral mercury. They've taken it out of vaccines, so no longer the vaccines are no longer dangerous. And what they were forced to admit in court was it's still in the vaccine, they're just not labeling it.
And so let's look at this in the context, even though this is not it, and we don't have to take the discussion off in this digression. But I want the listeners to consider, you know, when we hear about the GMO BS and all these other processed food BS, what they tend to do is they try to dissect the issues. And they'll say to you, well, wait a minute, this vaccine is safe. Well, the vaccine itself may be safe and build the antibodies, but the administration of it, which means they put in the mercury to hold it together, they put in the mercury to do whatever they say it needs to do. It's the same thing with your processed foods and GMOs. Each independent element may be safe, but when you put them together and put the bonding agents with them, you've now created something that's not good for the human body.
It's not only not good, it is very toxic.
Yeah, well, mercury especially. In any way.
Thimerosal is not just mercury. Mineral mercury is the, you know, the silver stuff that rolls around on your desk. But mineral mercury is the most toxic non-radioactive metal that there is. And to put that into an infant's body is impossibly crazy.
And as they say here, too, it converts to inorganic mercury in the body. Regardless of how they give it to you, it converts to inorganic mercury in the body.
But thimerosal is organic mercury, and it turns out that organic mercury is 100 times as toxic as mineral mercury.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's, I mean, they're putting a highly, highly toxic substance in the child's body when their bodies are not even mature enough, their immune systems are not even mature enough to respond to produce the antibodies that the vaccines are supposed to do.
And the problem with this, in my opinion, Howard, and let's see how you feel, is that we are not allowed to have the rational discussion. We are supposed to blindly, for instance, the same fruitcakes who can't accept climate change science will insist that we must accept this science blindly.
And it's not science. What they have here is not science. It's marketing. Because they have never, ever, ever tested these vaccines for more than 2 months and never on the target population. They don't test it on infants. They don't test it on old people. They don't test it on people who have compromised immune systems, like who are on chemotherapy or who have some kind of severe illness. They don't test it on those people. They test it on robust and healthy 18 to 21-year-olds. And if those people get sick in the middle of the test, they somehow find a way to eject them from the test. They lied about something, or something. They find a way to eject them from the test. Then these healthy 18 to 21-year-olds who make it through the test, they say, well, everybody that we tested it on for 2 months maximum, by the way, came through without any disease, so it's safe. But they don't test it for 6 months or a year or 2 years.
And I'm really torn on the larger issue, which is not about the vaccines, but they're using the vaccines as the cudgel in order to do this. I'm torn about the larger issue in so many ways, which is, does the government, I don't care whether it's local, state, federal, whoever, you know, world, who cares? Does the government have the right to take away the medical choice from the individual in any case? Not in certain cases. I'm not trying to qualify. In any case. Because to me, that's the larger issue. The issue is, do you have the right to choose for yourself? And if I'm not trusting the vaccines, if I'm not trusting the manufacturers, then I think it's up to them to show the trust in the product, not force me to have to take it. And we have reverted to the force because it's easier. So we're calling people who have said that there is a connection between the MMR and autism. We're calling them nuts, fruitcakes.
No, and now terrorists.
And now terrorists, right.
Okay, and then there's even a you know, in California, there are ways of preventing your child from being forced to take vaccines by saying I have a religious objection to it, right?
Right.
So or some other, you know, valid objection.
Or medical reason, because of you have a compromised immune system, which you can medically document that that's the case. Therefore, you can't have it.
But there is now a legislator in California who has made. Doing his best to remove that ability to exempt your child from it.
Well, here's my problem with what I heard, and I heard it quickly. Might have been it was coming from it was on the radio, and what I heard, I object to, period, anyway, even what you said. Here's my thing. Is that what I heard is that they were trying to put through a bill that would still grant the exemptions based on a compromised immune system or a religious preference, but nothing else. And to me, that's also BS, and I'm going to tell you why. I think it's crap. The reason it's crap is because why should a religious preference, which I don't acknowledge and I'm not a part of, and I don't believe is a valid system for really framing your life, most religions, I'm very much against, why should that have an exception to my research, my study, my information that I've looked into, where I've said, I don't believe this is the right choice for my child. I don't believe that stands as a valid exception. Why is the Christian Scientist child that is not allowed to get vaccinations safer than my child that I choose not to have vaccinated with that? They're no safer.
Right. And
so it does, to me, it doesn't hold water for compromised immune system is a totally different thing, but that doesn't hold water for me as valid. So if that child can have an exception, so can mine.
You know, the political fear-mongering.
And I'm not against Christian Scientists. I'm just saying you can't
the political fear-mongering that goes on in place of and that masquerades as science. Is absolutely horrendous and horrific. Now, if they call in the United Kingdom, they're calling people vaccine deniers. That's what they call me, vaccine deniers, or anyone who speaks about it publicly that it's dangerous and that it has that people have been lying about the research and the safety of it the CDC has been lying about it for 13 years, and they have destroyed careers because of it, right? They're now saying that anyone who speaks out against it is a terrorist, right? Now, when you start saying attaching that label to it, now you have all the consequences of coming from that. You get on watch lists. You can't fly anywhere. You're open to being snatched off the street and deported, and nobody knows where you are, and nobody can tell you where you are, and you can't get defended.
And right now, I just have to say that for parents out there who would like to make alternative choices, I've just got to be clear with you. Right now, we are at this emotional crisis point. The pendulum always swings to an extreme, one way or the other. We are at an extreme. I'm going to call it right because that's my way. I don't care. But we're at an extreme point right now where they are challenging the efficacy of being able to say, this vaccine is not okay for my child right now. It's not okay for my child at this age. It's not okay bundled. It's not okay if it has mercury in it. And I know for a fact, this is not secondhand information, that doctors have lied about vaccines having mercury in it. Chances are, I believe the doctors that have lied, I say lie because they had knowledge. I should change it differently. Oftentimes, a doctor will just say whatever the hell they need to say to get you to take the vaccine without even knowing if it has mercury in it or not. So they'll tell you, no, it's safe. It doesn't have mercury. And it does. So the thing is, truth in advertising means they need to actually be very specific, very clear, and as Howard said, have proper validated tests. Now, my father-in-law used to always say, you know, because he was a doctor, you know, everything needed, you know, double-blind studies. Now, I don't know where they got all these blind guys for these studies, but what I do know is, as Howard said, you can stack the deck in any way you want, even in double-blind studies. It doesn't matter. You know, what Marianne Williamson pointed out on Bill Maher, which is a very important thing, and I do not believe in religion. I got to keep saying that. I'm an anti-theist, and I'm just trying to be accurate. But Marianne Williamson pointed out that people who participate in regular prayer or are prayed over heal faster than people who do not. And their recovery is more well documented.
But now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything about religion.
It doesn't. But what it means is that when we feel a connection, when we feel a caring, when we feel that there is hope in our process and our health, and that means taking charge of our health, we heal better no matter what drugs are given or not given to you. And I think that's a critically important element. Now, the AMA doesn't necessarily want you to know that, and the drug companies don't want you to know that. They want you to take the next best thing. And frankly, you know, I've had the measles vaccine when I was a kid. I had the measles when I was a kid. And if for some reason I went to Disneyland and contracted it again and became sterile at my age, it's probably better for generations to come.
But...
but I'm going to tell you right now, I agree with Harold very strongly about this, that this is a very large fraud being perpetrated on us. And they've gotten, even when unfortunately one of my heroes, John Stewart, speaks out against the vaccine deniers, speaks out against them, you know, and mocks them. And Bill Maher, who said he doesn't agree with the flu vaccine because he knows that's BS, but this measles thing is putting everyone at risk. I actually find it very hard to know how we keep going forward except to do exactly what is right for you. Make sure if you're going to speak out against it, you get the information and you have the information in your back pocket. You just don't run around saying, well, this is BS and I'm not going to do it, because that doesn't help us. That hurts us all.
That's absolutely correct. And by the way, I heard the opposite point of view as well from someone who knows what he's talking about. And this is that a child who has been vaccinated with the MMR vaccine, after 21 to 28 days, or in that period of 21 to 28 days, they will actually start to shed measles viruses through their skin. Okay.
So they're actually contagious.
They are contagious. That's right. So it is actually the vaccination that is spreading this disease. And they won't tell you that either.
Well,
the only thing that they tell you on the mainstream media, and not just mainstream media, but also I include NPR on this, because they've had nonstop programs about vaccine deniers and how they're endangering everybody, and they're spouting the old company line. Namely, that Dr. Wakefield is a fraud, that he had fraudulent studies, that he's been debunked and everything, and it's nonsense.
Well, tell the listeners about Dr. Wakefield so they can explore and find out more about that.
Dr. Wakefield, I don't know his first name, Dr. Wakefield was...
Well, let's call him Bob.
Bob, yeah. So Dr. Wakefield was a doctor who... who did some research on these vaccines and found a very strong relationship between vaccination and autism. He found that there was a doctor in Chicago who served underserved, who was in an underserved, poorer neighborhood, whose parents couldn't afford perinatal care and who couldn't afford vaccines. And so he stated unequivocally that he had never seen a child, an unvaccinated child, with autism. And the same thing happens with Quakers, now with the Mennonites, right? Mennonites do not believe in that stuff. They don't get vaccinated. They don't get autism. And yet, When I was a child, it was a 1 in 50,000 problem. Today, it's a 1 in 50 problem. I'm sorry. Yes, 1 in 50. And an MIT researcher said that there's also a strong relationship between glyphosate and the production of autism.
What's glyphosate?
Glyphosate is the active ingredient of Roundup, of Monsanto's pesticide Roundup.
Yeah, so eat your corn, people.
Yeah, and apparently it's much more toxic than they ever acknowledged, and even the inert ingredients of Roundup are hundreds of times more toxic than they acknowledged. So this horrible stuff is getting sprayed on all of our food, more and more of it, as they approve more and more crops for genetic modification. And we are, it's a cumulative thing in our bodies. It's building and building. And it's very much associated with autism. So when, you know, this MIT researcher has said, pretty much unequivocally, that within 10 years, 50% of all children, one out of every two children, will have autism. Now, when you consider that it takes $1.4 million to raise a child to age 18 who has autism, right? Not to mention the amount, the number of people, and the emotional drain of doing that, the amount of people it takes to take care of that. And the parents have to pay. The government's not going to pay. They insisted you get the vaccine. They're not going to pay for the consequences of it. So when the parents have to pay for this, they'll collapse. They collapse, right? But if 50% of all the children, so that's 38 million children, times $1.4 million each, that's about $60 trillion. That somebody's going to have to come up with. We don't have that much money. $60 trillion, not in our pockets. We're getting more and more of our incomes taken away from us by the Koch brothers. So by the time we have to come up with a $1.4 million, we won't be able to come up with $50.
So I want to remind folks again that we're talking with Howard Strauss from Gerson Health Media. You can go to gersonmedia.com, GERSONM, as in Mike, EDIA. He has his own show on the power of natural healing on the Health and Wellness Channel at 11 a.m. on Mondays. And you can hear him Monday through Friday, actually Monday through Saturday, right here on Radio Monterey during the week, Monday through Friday. He's at 4 p.m., and he's at 5 and 6 p.m. on Saturdays. So we give a lot of coverage to the information. And Howard is the voice in the wilderness crying out, saying, pay attention, make your choices, be informed. And we are currently talking about vaccines. But I want to jump back to something, a point you made, Howard, because
yeah, sure.
I think, and actually it's built on several points you made, and it's a point I also tried to make earlier. What people are not paying attention to is the cumulative effect of things. Now, when we grew up, we had a measles vaccine, we had a mumps vaccine, we might have even had a rubella vaccine. I don't know if I got one of those or not. I know I got polio, I know I got a bunch of things as a kid. But we didn't get them all at once. We got them individually. In addition, we now live in a society with so much more of what we're encountering as chemical.
Toxic.
Yeah, we're getting it through the air, we're getting it through our food supply, and then we're also getting it through the vaccines.
And the water.
Nobody, none of these pharmaceutical companies want to look at the cumulative effect of the chemicalization of young children in general, the whole thing, not the independent thing. So when I said earlier, we are very willing to look at the disparate parts of different things. We're willing to look at the measles vaccine as a separate culture and say, gee, that culture is safe. We're willing to look at the mumps culture and say that culture is safe. We're not even willing to really look at the MMR in its context. We're not willing to look at the MMR in context to a GMO-fed diet. We're not willing to look at the MMR in the context of a GMO-fed diet and chemicalization in our air. We're not willing to look at the chemicalization of our air, the MMR, and the GMO diet with the water supply, all of these things in one context and say, we are treating that child like a toxic agent itself that we are trying to keep from building the natural antibodies the child needs in order to grow healthy organs and live a healthy life. And so what we've seen is a greater spread of cancer, a greater risk of diabetes. You know, actually childhood diabetes is dramatically on the rise. A greater sense of obesity and more autism in the population. And when they all turn around and say those are factors we shouldn't be looking at, the only response can be, well, that's BS. We need to look at all those factors because what's different now than years ago? And they could also say, I think this is valid, we didn't necessarily have the documentation of some of this years ago. That's very true. But there's an acceleration that we're not paying attention to. And all the people that I know that object to vaccines are objecting, as you pointed out validly, Howard, of the acceleration of the conditions and our unwillingness to truly look at it in a real scientific way.
Absolutely. And, I'm a scientist. I went to the MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Well, I went too, but I just went to visit. Were you actually a student?
No, I can.
Yeah, I know.
I can show you the tool marks on my brain.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And they hurt. technology was worshipped at MIT. Yeah. I mean, we were the universe's central breeding ground for dweebs. You know, I'm a MIT dweeb.
Yeah, especially at the time you went, probably for about 20 years or so. That was kind of the site and the culture. Before there ever was a Silicon Valley,
yeah.
They were coming out of MIT.
That's right.
Really where it was.
That's right.
And the Brain Trust was there in Massachusetts.
Right. And it was only after Silicon Valley started making these gazillionaires that suddenly became a little bit more fashionable to be a dweeb who was going to make a gazillion dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, look at Bill Gates. Yeah. You know, and nobody would look sideways with him otherwise. You know.
Yeah.
By the way, he has a slight case of autism related complex as well. So he's a little bit bent. And by the way, he's also he also just gave $1 billion. His foundation gave $1 billion to see that every child on the planet should be vaccinated. So he's definitely on the dark side.
Well, yeah, and plus he's promoting GMOs. And the right wing mantra about this is that why wouldn't you use GMOs to feed children around the world? Don't you want them to eat? No, yeah, I want them to eat, but I want them to eat real food. I don't want them to eat Lego plastic wrapped in a bun.
And they're not getting more food. I mean, that's a myth as well. That's a lie that they spread. The farmers who actually believe that lie in India are now committing suicide at a phenomenal rate because they can't raise as much food using the pesticides and artificial fertilizers that Monsanto's selling them, and they have to pay more and more and more for the chemical stuff, and they're going broke, and they can't support their family, and they're committing suicide.
Yeah,
it's huge rate. I mean, hundreds of thousands now.
Yeah, this is all about profit. You know, when we grew up reading about the West and East Indian trading companies from Great Britain, and essentially the colonization of the world by Great Britain was about trade. Nothing else, ladies and gentlemen. It wasn't bringing civilization. It wasn't even bringing religion to the heathen. It was about trade. And what we're seeing now is the globalization of chemical trade, fostered predominantly by the United States government in support with Monsanto.
And Monsanto is not after just profit, Solazar. Monsanto wants to patent the seeds for every plant, every food plant on the planet. And when they control the patent for food plants, then they control the planet. Because if they control the patent for all of these seeds, then especially if they make like the Terminator seed, right, which doesn't germinate a second time, it only germinates once and then you have to buy it again. If they control that, then they can shut off the food supply to any segment of population, any political segment, any country that they want, any section of the world that they want. This is not about just money and profit. This is about world domination through control of the food supply.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to keep in mind, again, this is all about our ability to make choices. So whether you agree with Howard or agree with me, it doesn't matter as much as you have the right to make the choice. If you choose to eat or vaccinate or do anything else, we want you to have that choice. We want to speak out about what we believe the better choices may be, but we want you to have the choice of yes or no. And what they're doing now with this pandemic process of trying to drive us to fear about measles and lack of vaccinations and the danger that people are being put in, is they want to take away your choice so they can give you. I recommend, if you haven't seen it or you don't are not familiar with it, is you go back and look at the movie Soylent Green with Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson. It very clearly gets down to what the situation could be. Now, you might say that that's fear-mongering on my part. No, I'm not really saying that. What I am saying is that in Soylent Green, there happens to be a lack of food supply, but these different Soylent products are manufactured as new ways of giving people the nutrition and food that they want, and it's touted as the great innovation. And then Soylent Green is the newest one coming out, and there's a whole marketing program and plan. But how it's done and what it's really all about is the underlying premise that I want to share with you. And for those of you who have never liked science fiction, I will tell you that in my lifetime, I found more truth in science fiction than anything else I read, because underlying their themes are corporatocracy, fascism, the control by business of society driving what a business driving what a government does. All of that exists consistently in the themes in science fiction. It's just masked around with all these different stories. Remember, power is what it's all about. Power and control.
Absolutely. And if you want to be a slave, then just close your eyes and believe what the government is telling you, because that's what they want. They want you to be a slave, which is one of the reasons why these big corporations have completely dominated the mainstream media. Is that that's the only story that they're hearing, is the story that, you know, the echo chamber that is mainstream media.
Yeah, you know, because when educated and believably informed idiots such as Scalia and Clarence Thomas and even, unfortunately, John Roberts put through Citizens United into our political system, they were doing in our political system outright what's already happening in the culture. And they actually made it harder for our government to actually act as the broker on our behalf. We've had times in our history where the government has been able to broker successfully on behalf of each and every one of us as the small individual against great power and great wealth. But right now is a much more challenging time, because the Citizens United decision essentially said to the government, to the corporations, go buy the government you want. It's okay. Have at it. And that's exactly what we see, or as Howard said earlier, the Koch brothers, who are spending millions of their billions.
They just announced that they're spending up to $1 billion on the next election cycle.
Yeah. So why does somebody when they made the ruling that money is speech, which is also BS, money is not speech. Money is power. Money is power. We use money for power. That's what we use it for. And people who have a lot of money have been shown sociopathically to have a mindset that's different than yours and mine, unless I'm talking to somebody who has such a great deal of money that you have this. But people who have money tend to see themselves, great money, great wealth, tend to see themselves as being more entitled than those who don't. And it's a condition of saying, obviously, there's something deficient in me because I don't have this great wealth. And there's something non-deficient in them because they do. And that, unfortunately, leads to a schism in our society that we cannot then pull together, and we cannot then pull each other up, because those with power will always push down. Power oppresses. Strength brings up.
I heard a TED Talk yesterday by a person.
By TED?
Sorry?
By Ted?
No, not by Ted himself, but by a Seattle, you know, Microsoft type billionaire, you mm-hmm, know. Mm-hmm. And he said that there is no case, none in human history where the wealthy use their wealth to buy power and for no other end but to accumulate more and more and more wealth, you ended up with either one or the other outcome. Even in democracy, you ended up with one or the other outcome, either a plutocracy, fascism, a dictatorship, or pitchforks, okay, a revolution. And he said those are the only two outcomes that have ever happened when such behavior has been. And we are in that final phase of this democracy where that is the where that accumulation of wealth, where the people of great greed just keep gathering it to themselves, not spreading it around, not giving it to anyone else, and they retire behind their gated communities and listen to the screaming outside and ignore it. Right? If they don't do something, he said very, very clearly. He said that if they don't do something, the pitchforks are coming. They're coming.
And I actually, I'm not being the historian that he obviously was or the researcher that he obviously was, have to agree with that, because what we're doing is creating a society that can't sustain themselves. Now, Edgar Allan Poe wrote a really powerful story, a lot of powerful stories, but he wrote one called The Mask of the Red Death. And the Red Death, The Mask of the Red Death was really based on the issue of the plague that spread through Europe. And here's what happened. The Red Death hit the surrounding countryside. So the wealthy and the nobles walled themselves into their castle and sealed themselves off from any interaction with the external world. And on New Year's, they held a masked ball, and they had these different rooms that were all different colors. And what they noticed is that there was this one mysterious masked figure, and people were curious as to who this masked figure was and what he would reveal himself, because at midnight, the masks came off. And the masked figure, toward midnight, began leaving from one room and going into the next color room. And the people went with him to follow because they were curious about the charisma of this masked figure, until the masked figure took him into the maroon room. And the maroon room had that bathing glow around everybody, almost as if the Red Death had hit all of them. And when the masked figure at midnight took off his mask, he was the Red Death, and everyone died. Now, the point that I'm bringing that out is that the nobility, the wealthy, the haves against the have-nots cannot sustain themselves if they continue to take away from the have-nots and give them fewer and fewer crumbs at the table. That's actually not a sustainable issue for their own survival, because you can't buy from people who can no longer provide. You can't buy from people who can no longer manufacture. You can't buy from people who can no longer provide the services that you need in order for you to supposedly enjoy all your great wealth. And at some point, you won't be able to pay for enough people to do that, because they won't be there.
Well, you'll have, what they don't realize, they don't realize they're blinded by their own wealth, by their believing their own stories. They're blinded to the fact of basic economics. If an assembly line worker is not paid enough to even support himself and his family, much less purchase your product, right? Then eventually your product will sit on the shelves and go without purchasers, because there's no money to buy it. The only people who can buy it are the wealthy elites, and they're not going to buy the masses of goods that you need to sell to sustain a big business. So it's a really selfish thing to do, to pay your workers enough so that they can buy your product. And that's been shown all over and over again in every economic test, that if you raise the minimum wage, then the people have more money, and the money circulates, and it goes to buy food and services and goods and products, which then stimulates the economy, and it stimulates business, and it makes for more profits. But somehow these people are so short-sighted that they think that by driving wages down, that they can make more of a profit. and they just don't see the other side of it. The people can't afford to buy the product.
You know, many of you out there know that I do readings using the Osho Zen Tarot card. I mean, I do a variety of types of things, astrology, numerology, palmistry, etc. But when I use tarot cards, I use the Osho Zen Tarot deck. And when I pulled the cards for this week, one of the cards I pulled is the Four of Rainbows, which is known as the Miser card. So it shows a woman with wealth, kind of walled up in her wealth. She's wearing a stole. She has a peacock feather in her hair. She has all of her wealth. And what's happening is that her world is crumbling around her, because by hoarding it, everything is losing its beauty, its luster, its ability. Her peacock feather is wilted and fainting. Her jewels are turning into rocks and mud, you know, and her beauty is going with age. So what it really says is that, yeah, we can have all the wealth in the world, but by hoarding it, it loses its beauty. It loses its wealth. It loses its meaning. After all, wealth is really just a measurement, and how we've chosen to measure through the centuries has always varied. And so, therefore, somebody who was wealthy in 5 AD would not necessarily be wealthy today with those same measurements that they had then. So we've got to recognize that we cannot hold on to things, that wealth is really about sharing and giving. Wealth is about receiving and passing on. It's so much more than just the having. And it's one of the things, and I will speak out against them, is one of the things that has always annoyed me is the Walton family. Because Sam Walton was not the people that his progeny are. They are the ones that didn't have to work for the wealth that they inherited. And yet they are the wealthiest people in America that have more money than, I think, 95% of the people below them. And they didn't have to work for it. They inherited it. Now, don't tell me, yes, I sat on this board. Yes, I had to go work as a kid in the store. How many of you went to work at a McDonald's or something? I never worked at a McDonald's, but I worked at a beach stand on the beach, you know, for the summers. I worked at Kinney's Shoes, you know, selling shoes with an assistant manager that was always hitting on me. You know, I mean, I did a lot of things that were working. But, you know, I know kids who went and caddied at golf every weekend, and they did it religiously. You know, these were all things that required people to pay attention, to learn things, to know things, and yet to do some physical labor at the same time. My point about that is that everybody gets to do that. That's not the same as saying you were born into a family that had wealth. And I'm not against that for you. But don't act to me like you're entitled to that by the accident of birth. That's a totally different thing. And so I really object to the hoarding of wealth. I also object, actually, to the supposed philanthropy of
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates, yeah. My God, I could see his face and couldn't come to his name. Because imposing vaccinations, imposing GMOs on the world is not philanthropy. It's control. And Bill Gates is, I don't care who he married, has never been a philanthropist. Everything about Bill Gates is less than admirable, if you look at it. You know, of course, I could say the same thing about Steve Jobs. It's just he was brilliant. Bill Gates was a ruthless businessman. Steve Jobs was ruthless, but he was ruthless to the people around him, but he was brilliant. But both of them built their monopolies because they brooked no interference. That's what it was.
And they were willing to do anything to anybody.
To serve their needs.
Yeah.
And their supposed vision and or direction. Now, Bill Gates did change the world in this century. There's no question about it. Through the creation of the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod, all of that.
That wasn't Bill Gates. That was Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs. I meant, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. Yeah. I want to thank Howard for joining us. There's a couple of announcements I want to make, and I want to make sure we do get to them. But I want to thank Howard for joining us and remind everybody, go to garrisonmedia.com for Howard Strauss. He's on The Power of Natural Healing every Monday at 11 a.m. and right here on Radio Monterey, 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, 5 and 6 p.m. on Saturdays. So you can get an awful lot of the information to allow you to be informed. Now, here's the thing I'm going to say to you, and I say this with Howard sitting right here, is that, You don't have to take our word for it, anything I say or anything Howard says, but take it as a jumping off point to go explore and find out more. Be informed. Make your informed choices.
So. Absolutely. And let me say one thing here. You were talking about wealth and what's true wealth. With friends like you, having friends like you, Solar Czar, makes me wealthy.
Oh, well, thank
that's,
you, sir.
That's what I feel like.
That's how we feel as well.
I would much rather have you as my friend than have a big bank account and no friends.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be said for that. So for those of you who don't really recognize that position, go watch Mr. Holland's Opus. It's a wonderful illustrative thing of someone who saw his life going in a different direction, but his life was the life he lived. And at the point in time when he thought he had nothing, he found how rich he really was. What I also wanted to remind everyone is this coming February 14th is not just Valentine's Day, that phony artificial holiday that was originally constructed by the Catholic Church. It's also World Sound Healing Day. And you can go to worldsoundhealingday.org to participate with Jonathan Goldman and those people around the world who will be taking some moments to create some sound healing moments for peace and connection throughout the world. You know, everything Howard's talking about, too, here with us, can also be rectified by our intention and our focus and our willingness to create peace around the world, because power is what creates wars. Power is what creates divisions. And the need for control is what accelerates and amplifies those situations. So let's go in the face of power by creating peace. And with that, we're going to close out with a positive thought, because I want you to remember to be positive in your thoughts. And we're going to listen. We're going to close out tonight with Van Morrison and the Bright Side of the Road. So tomorrow we'll be back once again with Israel Hurtado, who will be teaching us how to awaken and bring knowledge over from the other side. And Charlotte Tinker, the channel of Kuan Yin, who will share Kuan Yin wisdom with us. So as we go through our healing process, remember, it's all about our choice. And right now I choose to close with The Bright Side of the Road by Van Morrison. Thank you for listening. Many blessings. Namaste. Sometimes we don't know why.